Welcome to Recovery Comes Home Radio, your go-to podcast for all things related to addiction recovery. Whether you are an individual in recovery, a concerned loved one, or a dedicated professional, this podcast is tailored just for you. Here, we are all about empowering you with the tools, insights, and inspiration you need to move forward. So grab your headphones, tune in, and let's embark on this transformative journey together.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Welcome to another episode of Recovery Comes Home Radio. Today, I am especially excited. I've got Vera with me today, and she is a certified holistic life coach, a yoga instructor, and meditation teacher. She's suffered with her own addictions from cocaine, alcohol, and cannabis, and her mission is to advocate for and support those who want to make a change in their lives by creating a safe environment without judgment or shame. She believes in the potential of every person to build an authentic life filled with meaning, joy, and happy relationships. Her mission is to support people who feel disconnected from others and themselves to rediscover that connection through yoga, mindfulness, and coaching. Welcome to our show, Vera.
Hi, Adrienne. Thanks for having me.
So you have quite a story, a backstory of addiction. And I do want to get deep into the meditation and the yoga because I think that's so important for our audience. Both of those things, exercise and meditation. I'm a Pilates girl myself, but I do love yoga. Mm-hmm. So why don't you get us started and just tell us what it was like for you?
Well, I struggled with cocaine for about 14 years. And I think in my early 20s, I just thought, oh, this is such a fun way to party. I mean, growing up in the 90s and early 2000s, we were told that if you get blackout drunk, then you had a good time. I was very lonely when I was growing up. Didn't have a lot of friends, always really envied the popular crowd, and just thought, how can I get in with them? That is the life I want to live. Just surrounded by friends, surrounded by people who love me, always having lots of events to go to, because it was like the stark opposite of what my life was, which was very sheltered. My parents immigrated from Hong Kong, so it was a very typical immigrant Asian family where very strict house rules. The expectation was go straight home after school, study, do homework, no social life. Weekends were for practicing piano and more studying. If there wasn't homework, they would create homework for me. They just wanted me to be kept in their sight at all times, doing what they thought I should be doing. So then my only escape was just to read. Really. And as a deeply feeling person and a very sensitive person, I had a lot of emotions with nowhere to go. There wasn't anyone that I could really talk to. And I think that's one of the big tragedies of growing up in a household that seems very normal. Like the parents are still together. There's no divorce. There's no real fighting, but there's so much tension because in Chinese households, nothing is talked about. Anything emotional is swept under the rug. If someone is upset, it's just passive aggression. So while on the outside, things appeared perfect, or they really want to uphold that perfect image, in reality, I was sensing constant tension, constant dissatisfaction between my parents. And
the image that just came to my mind was like the duck that's swimming on the water, and underneath the water,
yeah,
are just like, so it looks great on the surface.
Yeah.
But underneath, the scaffolding has fallen down.
Yeah. And I internalized a lot of it because also typical in a Chinese household is the parents will say, well, you're not making me happy. You need to be better so I can be happy. You need to do X, Y, and Z so I can be proud of you. So it was just never enough. If I got straight A's but I was gaining weight as a teenager, then I was still falling short. So constant comments about, well, you're getting chubby, you shouldn't eat so much, or look at so-and-so's kid, they're excelling in X, Y, and Z, and what do you do? Right. Like almost, so there was always like the goalpost was always being moved.
Very much pressure, it sounds like. A lot of pressure on you.
A lot of pressure and also a lack of emotional empathy and understanding. So again, coming back to feeling like there was a lot of pressure coming on, but then there was no release. Because even if I did get that straight A report card, it would be quickly forgotten, and then the next criticism would come. So, and I don't fault them for it either. It's just how they grew up as well.
Right, their culture.
So, yeah. And so I think there definitely was a huge cultural divide. And then I got to see how other kids' parents weren't like that because most of the kids in school were white. So, different culture in their household too. And they would just be very confused as to why I was so unhappy all the time and why my parents always seemed to be mad at me.
Hey,
Yeah.
a lot
Yeah.
of confusion because you don't understand the dual standard as a kid. It's not until you get as an adult and you can go, oh, okay, I understand why they might be nervous about me going out. This is a new country, whatever. But at
Exactly.
the same time, it was very restrictive from your point of view.
Yeah, and because it was restrictive, it was very hard for me to make those friendships when everyone else was allowed to go and do group activities. I wasn't allowed to go. So their friendships would start to get closer, and I would always just kind of fall behind or be just slightly outside from everybody else. And that feeling of isolation and disconnect, just everywhere I look, I can't seem to find someone to connect with.
I like
So
how you
then.
put that isolation is like being on the outside looking in.
Yeah.
You're a part of every group, but you're not ever really a member.
Exactly. And it's like, how do I get myself to be included? Like, how do I make myself more likable? Well, it must be that they're allowed to drink and go to parties, and I'm not, so I'm lame and a loser. So then, when I turned 19, I took a trip to Ireland for the summer in between university semesters, and huge drinking culture over there. And I just let loose. Got drunk for the first time within probably 3 days of being there. I think a week or two, got high on ecstasy the first time. And just kept chasing that high. And then I was introduced to cocaine at the end of the summer, and that just felt like the rest of my life. From that moment on, that was probably the number one thing at the
Yeah.
forefront of my mind, was this one substance that made me so extroverted, so fearless, and so likable.
Yeah.
Like, all of a sudden, I could have a conversation with anybody and seemingly become friends with anybody. Of course, the next morning in the hangover and the reality of things, it's much different. I remember just feeling shame every morning when I woke up because I was like, why did I say that? That wasn't even something I would say normally. Who was that?
Who is that?
So, yeah, there was always this representative that was coming out when
I
I
love
drank and got
that.
high.
I
Yeah.
use that a lot too, that terminology. I didn't
Yeah.
speak to you. I spoke to Vera's representative for a long time, right?
Yeah. And
Was
so
it your
then,
way of like keeping people at arm's length?
no, it was my way of connecting. That's the ironic thing, is that I thought that I needed alcohol and cocaine to help me connect with people, but
Right.
it actually kept me disconnected and it kept me isolated because who they were talking to wasn't even the true me. So then, to keep chasing that feeling of connection that I so wanted, I had to keep getting drunk and high. Yeah.
That's the cycle. That was my husband's drugs of choice, was alcohol and cocaine, and he said he liked cocaine because it let him drink longer.
That too. I mean, the two
Yeah.
went hand in hand. If I had a drink, I would want cocaine, and vice versa. If I started doing coke, I would want to drink more.
And
The
so
two
what started
together.
happening as a result?
Well, it just got out of hand. Like, it wasn't a partying thing anymore. It was, I couldn't wait to get home after work so I could start using. And then sometimes it would carry over into the next day because I'd stay up all night and I had to go to work the next day. And there was no way that I could function without more drugs. And
Yep.
then, yeah, I was like, what am I doing? Because I just felt so awful. Like, I wasn't eating, I lost so much weight, and my nervous system was a wreck, obviously, because it was debilitating anxiety and depression if I wasn't using or if I wasn't drinking.
Do you think that the using made that initial feeling worse? Because then you had something to compare it to. Like, Oh, on cocaine and alcohol, I'm outgoing, I'm friendly, I'm good looking, I have intelligent conversations. And then the reality is that you said things that you no wouldn't normally say or might do things you wouldn't normally do. How did you
Oh,
reconcile that?
absolutely. It was so much anxiety. Like waking up every morning was anxiety. It was just a ball of anxiety and regret and swearing, okay, I'm gonna be good. I'm not gonna do this again this weekend. And I could stay sober from Monday to Thursday, and then Friday would come around. And no matter what I had sworn to myself that week, I would find myself calling my dealer as I was getting home from walking my dog. Meet me on
And
the
it's
house.
funny, we talk about that a lot at the houses. What you would do to go meet somebody. It's okay, go down this corner here and I'll be about a half a block down. And nobody would do that.
Oh, I did so many things that would make me question myself. If you had any self-respect at all, like you would not be doing this. And yet, it seems so much more important to just get that gram. That was the only thing that my brain was like, no, this is the number one priority. Everything else doesn't matter. I was very lucky that I met my husband and he brought me real joy. So we've been together for 14 years. We struggled with addiction together, but in the moments of sobriety, I was still feeling real true joy with him and real true connection. And it was very unexpected because we got together just like partying. And when we were sober, we actually really liked each other too.
That's a bonus.
Yeah. So he actually was probably the first thing that came into my adult life that made me want to stop and gave me hope that I could stop, that there was true happiness. And so now there was something to compare to, right? Fake happiness brought on from substances and true happiness, like even when I'm sober, I have this person that makes me laugh, that truly sees me. I think that's one
That's
of the
it.
main things is truly feeling seen and heard for the first time in my life by
I
somebody
think
else.
that's an important point to make because a lot of our listeners are going to resonate with that. That a big reason that they turned to drugs and alcohol was they didn't feel seen or heard. They didn't know those communication or those interactive skills to be able to engage with someone without some kind of aid to help them.
Yeah, and I think it comes back to I was growing up, and I'm sure lots of people are in the same situation. If you don't feel seen and heard and you're constantly dismissed, then you internalize that and feel like it's something wrong with you. And
Not a
so
bad
you think,
choice. You're a bad person, right?
yeah, and so you feel like the substances make you more acceptable. And so, okay, well, then I just need this if that's what it takes. I've never felt that happy until I had that first hit of ecstasy. I never felt that confident until I had that first line of cocaine.
But then in the
So,
moments after you met your husband, you did find that there were some times where you could really connect on a soul level
yes.
and feel joy and happiness.
And true joy, true happiness, and true confidence. He is one of my biggest cheerleaders. I'm so lucky to have him.
So it showed it was possible.
Yeah, it showed me that actually me without the substances is still lovable and still acceptable.
Of course. Oh, that makes me sad that you say that because I mean, I look at you, I've talked to you, you're beautiful, you're articulate, you're intelligent, and it's a hard situation to be in because then you find this substance that is bad for you but makes you feel so good.
Yeah, I mean we do it because it works, right? It works for a long time until it doesn't.
Until it doesn't. That's right.
Yeah.
And tell me about those moments leading up to when it wasn't working anymore.
Well, I think it was really hurting him to see me like that, and I was also keeping it from him out of shame. And so he was really busy. He went back to school to become an engineer, and I was supporting him. And it was really lonely because he was at school like 12 to 14 hours a day. So he basically came to sleep. It was very hard. It was very hard for him and it was very hard for me. I just felt all of a sudden super lonely again. Like the person that I was depending on so much couldn't be there for me. And my very like drug addicted and immature mind felt like a victim.
Of course.
So
Of
then,
course.
yeah, when he was out of the house, in order to cope with the loneliness, it was more drugs and more alcohol. And he would come home and I would pretend like I was not using. And of course, he knew. And he was just so tired of the lies and going behind his back. And I was very tired of him getting mad at me and feeling so ashamed around it. And I was like, okay, I really need to quit this. And also, we had adopted a rescue dog, and I wanted to be better for her as well. And also, my sister, I have a younger sister that's 8 years younger than me. And I kept my addiction from her for a long time. And when I finally told her, it was like a huge weight off my shoulders. But I also knew that I had kept it from her because I wasn't ready to quit. And when I told her, I was ready to have somebody else hold me accountable.
You told on yourself.
Yeah, exactly. That's a great way of putting it. Because I knew out of all the people in my life, her and my husband's approval and love mean the most to me.
Do you
Like
think they
they're the things I
understood
don't
it more
want to
than
let down.
your parents?
My parents still don't know.
Wow.
And I'm sure that on some level they knew because I've yet these family things drunk and high, right?
Yeah.
And they know who I am when I'm sober. So I think they were just turning a blind eye because, again, we don't talk about hard
Right?
topics,
We sweep them
right?
under the rug until they start smelling and causing a disturbance, right?
So yeah, they never mentioned anything. In fact, I think it worked better for them that I was an alcoholic because there were a lot of issues that I didn't bring up. And it's actually in the last year since I've also quit alcohol that I've confronted them about a lot of the things that they did that were not okay. And now we're not speaking because they can't face it.
That there's, and I think you're right, that there's some people that just can't have those kind of conversations.
Exactly. Yeah. And I've made it very clear, like until we're ready to have those types of conversations, I'm not going to continue with this fake perfect family image. I'm
Yeah, that
done.
gets old really fast.
And
It's
the
not
only way
real.
was,
It's not real.
yeah. And because I knew it wasn't real, I needed alcohol and coke in order to help uphold that image.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And what was it like for you? Did you have huge withdrawals? Did you go to a treatment center? Did you do this on your own? How did that play out?
Well, I took a big leap and I went to counseling, which was terrifying. And it took years. It took probably 3 to 4 years of counseling and doing inner work and really facing myself to finally stop using. So I've been clean for exactly 4 years now from cocaine and 1 year and 2 months sober from alcohol.
Nice.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Thanks.
Really. That first year, the statistics I always tell everybody, if you can make it to that first year, you've got an 80% chance of making it long term.
Yeah, with coke, I had one pretty successful stint where I was clean for about 9 months, but then I found out that my dad had been cheating on my mom for 10 years, and in order to protect himself, he had triangulated me against her, telling me that she was crazy. And so when I found that out, I relapsed because I was also working with him at the time, so seeing him every day. And I just didn't know how to deal with it. There were so many emotions, very complicated emotions. And then when COVID hit, I had probably been using again for a year and a half. And when COVID hit, I was like, okay, I need to stop. I'm not going out anymore. I'm not partying anymore because there was nothing to go to and nobody to see, right? So I used one time while at home during the lockdown, and I was like, this is stupid. My body doesn't even like this anymore. And there's so many more things I can do with this time. I knew that I needed to set some goals in order to not fall into this huge depression of staying home all the time. So I started reading more books on personal growth, Wayne Dyer, Brené Brown, like a lot of books that helped me start to deal with my emotions. And by then I had started doing yoga for about 6 months. So I had this physical aspect too of releasing emotions that wasn't the gym, because the gym can be cathartic in some ways, but it's also, I'm still pushing myself. It's not teaching me real self-compassion, whereas yoga did.
I completely agree. I feel the same way with Pilates. There's a connection with the breath, with the movements. and things that doesn't happen in like circuit training or deadlifting or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think too is when I first started quitting, there was so much shame about the stop-start cycle. And
Yes.
it's why I wanted to become a yoga and meditation teacher, is why I wanted to become a coach, because I really want to let people know that there's no judgment and there's no shame. The fact that you're even trying to quit, the fact that
Yeah.
you're even thinking about wanting to quit, that's a
It's a big
huge
deal.
achievement in
Yeah, it's
itself.
a big deal.
To have that awareness and to say to yourself, this isn't working for me, that's huge.
Yeah, it's one of the hardest. I think narcissism is up there as well, but alcoholism addiction is very hard for someone who's in it to see that they have it.
Yeah, it's hard because,
You think everything's fine. You think you're hiding
yeah.
everything. You think everybody's believing all your lies. Meanwhile,
Yeah.
like everybody knows what's going on. You're not fooling anybody. And I think people really cheer you on once you get honest and just say,
Yeah.
this is what's been happening in my life, but I decided to turn it around. And this is how. That's not until like in a 12-step kind of thing where you get to the eighth and ninth step, because you got to be careful who you're making amends to. We've had people that have made amends to ex-wives, and the wives use the letters to go keep them from having custody.
Oh, gosh.
So it's important to be smart about it. That's why I think there's a sponsor to help you work through steps, is to go,
Yeah.
don't just go apologizing to everybody and
Yeah.
making promises that you don't know if you can keep.
Absolutely.
But it
Yeah.
is important to replace those bad coping mechanisms with healthy ones.
Well, absolutely. I think when I first started wanting to stop, it didn't work because it's okay. I'll take away alcohol, I'll take away cocaine, and then what? What
Right.
am I supposed to do with my time?
Right. What happens
So,
then? What do I do?
yeah.
That's a very
Yeah.
legitimate, like people, that's, I don't want people to miss this. What do I do with my life
Yeah.
after you stop the drugs is a huge problem. If you
Yeah.
have nothing on your schedule,
Yep.
that's a killer.
Yeah.
You have to get
Yeah.
busy, start reaching for, because you're old, your brain is like screaming, what are you doing to me? Where's the cocaine? Why aren't you drinking any beer? What are you doing to me? And you
Yeah, and it
have to
was
function
yeah.
like everything's fine.
So part of it was I had introduced yoga. Part of it was I had started reading more books that had helped me set more goals towards the direction that I wanted to go. And then, very realistically, we got legalized. So when I was having huge cravings and huge anxiety, I still had a crutch. I could smoke weed, it would calm me down, and I wouldn't want to use cocaine. But, it was replacing one addiction with the other.
Yeah, switching addictions.
Yeah, and so I had to come to that realization as well, is do I want to keep altering my mind every time I'm uncomfortable? Or is there a way to face this discomfort that's healthier not just physically, but healthier mentally, like steering me even more towards that direction that I want to go in, which is ultimately growth.
Yeah. And it sounds,
Because
I think with yoga, it kind of restores that body, mind, soul connection.
Yeah. And I think that's what happened as well. The more I did yoga, the more connected I was to myself,
Yeah.
the more misaligned the alcohol and the weed seemed.
Yeah, because you didn't want to be that person anymore.
And I didn't want to just numb out anymore. I was starting to see the benefits of connecting to myself and the benefits of connecting to emotion, how there's actually wisdom in emotion. And
Yeah.
it's not something to be feared constantly, because that's what was taught to us. My role models, my parents, don't do emotion. And so,
No, and I
yeah.
didn't. I have a very good friend, Grace, that had a similar situation. Parents over here from Hong Kong. She was in, like, when she very first went to school, she was in ESL. But by the time I met her in sixth grade, she was not in ESL anymore. But it seemed to me that there was a misaligned expectation that you're either going to be a doctor or a lawyer or a pilot. The bar in an Asian family is set very high. And if you don't achieve that, it reflects directly on the parents in that culture.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Even when I was working with my dad, I never felt agency. I was always just an extension of him. So he was very micromanagey. Well, make sure you say this. And did you do this? And what about that thing we talked about? Well, make sure you say this to him and not this. And so everything had to be under his control.
How about good
And
job?
are you joking?
How about I can't, I've never seen somebody handle that situation that way. That was awesome, Vera.
No. And when I left, he wouldn't talk to me, and I got really mad at him. So he did come to see me, and that was the first time that he said good job in 6.5 years. So I just quit
Wow.
my in November, so a few months ago, about 5 months ago. It was the day that my dog died, the rescue dog that had changed my
Oh.
life. She changed my life again. Yeah, she died, and I realized I didn't want to waste time anymore. Life is too precious.
Yeah, it's
And now
true.
that I am sober and I am clear on what I want and what I want my life to look like, I need to have the courage to say, this isn't for me. And I need to have the courage to walk away.
What about your friends, your circle of friends? Did you find that they were supportive, or did you have to change and get new friends?
It's still ongoing. There are some friends that I'm slowly coming to realize that maybe they don't have a place in my life anymore, not because they're addicts, but because, again, the version of me that was high and drunk suited them better because
Perfectly said.
I wasn't as confronting. Like I would just be drunk and laughing about the shallow things that they wanted to talk about and laugh about, right?
So
But
you were
now,
growing into a new person that they didn't want to be around anymore.
well, I think they just don't know how to be around me because they're
Yeah.
still the same.
Yeah.
And I don't know how to be around them.
Yeah, I've heard that saying, some people are in your life for a reason or a season.
Yeah, absolutely.
And maybe the season was over. And the only thing you had in common was the Coke and the beer.
Yeah, and also a place to go to get drunk and complain about our
Yeah.
lives. That we weren't
Yeah.
doing anything to change or do anything about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I bet they're
And
still sitting there, Vera.
they are. It's still the same problems. And I'm like, I can't listen to this anymore.
Yeah.
Because when I was on my personal growth journey, even though I hadn't quit the alcohol yet, I was already starting to have deeper conversation with them. Okay, so here's what I'm seeing. What do you want to do about it? And then I realized people don't want you to fix their problems. They just want a place to complain.
Yeah, we
Yeah.
found that in 15 years, most people do not want to get better.
Yeah.
Do not want to get better. There's a handful that want to get better, and we guard them like their life depends on it, because it does. But yeah, there's most definitely there's people that we have in our houses that have money and that they're just coming to dry out. And I know they're going back home to do the same thing, and then they'll be back in 6 months or whatever. You know, that's not the kind of change I hear you talking about. You have some deep inner knowing that you needed a different lifestyle.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think a different life altogether. Now I wake up every morning and I go to bed every night, and it feels like the perfect day because it was intentional.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah.
So do you struggle with cravings?
No.
No, that's good. Yeah. That's
It
hard for a
used to
lot
be
of people.
bad. The first year and a half to 2 years, I couldn't watch a movie where cocaine was being used. Yeah. So I
Wow.
would, yeah. My sister would literally give me a warning, like, don't watch this movie.
You guys sound like you're close.
We're very close.
Yeah, and I would imagine being in your situation, your sister also understands being brought up under that household.
I'm very lucky because, yeah, I have someone to tell me I'm not crazy. Like
Yeah. Yeah, that's
she knows.
important.
Yeah. But I mean, at the same time, because she's 8 years younger than me, her version of the parents are different from my version as well. Like by the
Sure.
time she was born, they were more financially secure, so they were less anxious, and they were also more mature, right? They were 8 years older by the time that they had her. So when I did confront them and I had a family meeting recently, she got to see the version of them that I've always known, and her eyes were just open. She's, oh my God, I didn't know how bad they could be. Yeah, they're very different towards her versus towards me.
Yeah, I can say the same without saying a whole lot more, because everybody's family is complicated. We've all got complicated families, but making personal boundaries, if that relationship is not serving you, my hat's off to you, because that is brutally hard to do, but it's essential for your survival.
Yeah, and it's essential for my peace. Like at this stage in life, I just want peace. And it's funny because a lot of the new friends I'm making are in their 60s.
Yeah,
They're at the same stage in life. Yeah, those are the people that I have the best conversations with.
that's cool. Well, I'm not quite there. I'm 52, so I'm getting close. But my husband's 66. I married, he robbed the cradle, so I've always been like that though. I've always talked to older people and always gotten along with older people. It's just weird. I don't know if that's the thing or what, but
Old soul thing.
yeah, an old soul thing. Because you don't want, I didn't, even as a kid, I didn't want superficial conversations. I wanted depth. I wanted substance.
Same. Which is
Yeah.
why books were so gratifying
And I
because in
love
books,
books. Yeah. You could send me to
you
my
get to.
room and I'd be fine.
And you get to have that depth
Yeah.
because you get to really know a character, what they truly feel and what they truly think, not the superficial crap, right?
Right. It's a real learning how to have real relationships. I didn't come from an alcoholic family, but my mom's father and my dad's father were alcoholics. So when I met my husband in church in 2006 and he introduced himself as a recovered alcoholic, I didn't know a lot about what he meant. I've gotten in the last 15 years a very good backdoor education, but everybody seems to have trauma that comes through our doors. And a huge number of people don't feel good enough. So they needed, in the past, it was a positive coping skill at one point, right? It would help and it would facilitate and it would make you social and amiable with other people. But since it's a false sense of security, it's got to crash and burn at some point.
Yeah,
So
and the
what have you
body.
done in the last year and well, and then in the last four, and then specifically in the last year without alcohol? Have you got some suggestions that people can reach for healthy coping mechanisms?
Yeah, I mean, number one is you got to start noticing what the body is feeling, right? One of my main reasons for quitting cocaine was like as I got older. It was really running my body down. And same thing with the alcohol. Just, yeah, I
Sugar
just
is
felt.
really corrosive on the body. People don't know that it's not the alcohol in the alcohol, it's the sugar that hurts people so bad.
So, having at least one physical activity that makes you feel really good, it could be as simple as going for a walk every day. It doesn't have to be like anything complicated. If you don't like going to the gym, don't go to the gym. Go for a walk. Yoga is really nice because it also gives you a sense of community. You're sharing energy with people in the room. There's a place for you to go to that kind of keeps you accountable to an hour practice. But I think for me anyway, that was my first entry into recovery, was finding a way to connect with my body because then my body could tell me this isn't working. And then the other part of that too is it's easier to act your way into right thinking. If we just sit there and we overthink and we think ourselves into a shame spiral of, I need to quit because this is making me such a worthless person or whatever, it's never going to help solve the problem.
No.
So having an action that we can take that takes us out of the mind is going to help us feel better on the other side of it. And ultimately, when we feel better, we're more likely to repeat something.
I love that. That's one of the things that we talk about all the time is that you can't think your way into right behavior, but you can behave your way into right thinking.
Exactly. And that is
Yeah.
so true and so integral, in my opinion, to recovery.
I think so too. You find out that there are things that you can use. One of my favorites is music. It can change my mood or mind without being a substance. I've had a couple of things that I was really nervous about speaking. That's a whole nother story because it took me a long time to get on camera for stuff that was all up here, installed up there, but up there nonetheless. I take ownership of it because I'm an adult now. So what I was told as a kid, I was just repeating to myself. in my own voice. And that's one thing that I did was I didn't like my voice at all growing up. And so I wrote a meditation that was about all the people that loved me, the people that I used to visit in the summers and relatives and whatnot. And I read it. I played music on my iPad and I used the phone to record it. I played ocean waves coming in and out, right? And then I recorded the meditation and I played it when I went to sleep. And that's how I got to, I wouldn't say fall in love with my voice, but at least I could listen to it talking to a computer screen and not go crazy. But I think we all come from complicated families. And particularly since 2019, mental health is up 40%, domestic violence, addiction, suicides, all these public health crises, I think that are coming from us not being connected.
Exactly.
Gabor Mate said the opposite of addiction is not sobriety, it's connection. And like we were talking about earlier, you can think that you're making a connection when you're high or drunk or altered from some other thing, a behavioral addiction, for example, the dopamine hit that you get from gambling. But at some point, you've got to start reaching for things that make you feel that same way, but don't have a negative toll on your body.
And because the dopamine rush that we get from cocaine is 50 times higher than, say, the dopamine rush we get from eating a piece of candy,
Wow.
we're going to have to find a bunch of things that can fill that void of dopamine, right?
Yeah.
So, yes, yoga helped, and then walking really helped, and then having real conversations with people who actually like genuinely cared about me, starting to feel that connection was so integral to the whole recovery process. And knowing when I needed all these things, right? Knowing when I needed these types of self-care and then actively going for it. It's a lot easier to just do a line of cocaine. You don't have to ask for anybody. You seem self-reliant in a way, right? But yeah, at the end of that, like the morning after, that desolation and that hopelessness and that despair is unmatched.
Yeah, and anybody who's gotten to that place, that dark, dark place that hope does not live there, and you think this is what my life has come to, this is all that it's ever going to be, so I just keep going through the motions every day and nothing changes if nothing changes, right?
And your baseline keeps getting messed up too, right? The more you do it.
The more
So
you do
when
it, that's right. The more you have to. And then you get to a point where you have to do it just to stay well, so you don't get.
just to feel normal.
Yeah, just so you don't get sick during the day. That's true. Well, it's been really wonderful talking with you. We're coming to a close for the interview, but I wanted to ask you the question I always ask everybody is if you could go back and talk to Vera, you can pick the age that you want to talk to Vera and tell her what you know now about yourself, about how grounded you are and how centered you are and how you just have a beautiful spirit radiating out of you. What would you tell her so that she could get that quicker?
Honestly, Adrienne, I don't think I would.
I love that answer. Tell me more.
I think I got where I am today precisely because of all the suffering.
Would you
All the
trade it?
suffering. No,
Me either.
not at all. Because all the suffering caused me to seek something else, something better, to seek the light, right? And the darker the places we've been, the more beautiful the light is on the other side of it. So, yeah, I've been to some pretty dark places, really dark places, but I wouldn't trade it for anything. It's lent me the wisdom that I have now, and it's also what keeps me going towards that light and towards more learning and more growth, and this intense drive to want to help people because I know how bad it feels.
Yeah, and that's a pretty sufficient motivator. Yeah. Well, this has been really phenomenal. You are such a bright soul. I'd love to have you on again later on down in maybe next season and you can talk to us more about yoga and meditation and come more from the professional's point of view. But I thought it was important that our audience get to know you and your story because it really is a beautiful 360, right? You've come full circle and now you are living your best life. It's not for show anymore, it's for real.
Yeah,
And that's
it's
beautiful.
thanks, Adrian.
All right. Well, thank you everybody for tuning in. We'll see you next time. Thanks for coming to Recovery Comes Home Radio.
Thank you for tuning in to Recovery Comes Home Radio. We hope that today's episode has provided you with valuable information and insights on the recovery process. Remember, you are not alone on this journey. Keep seeking support, practicing self-care, and moving forward one step at a time. Until next time, stay strong, stay resilient, and stay humble. Hope lives here.